What?
But this is real life. And fiction is fiction, Ryan Carr.
And the cross is the cross, you blasphemous pile of shit!
Mildred held the tiny gold cross before her, raising it toward Melmoth Cornelius like a weapon. He began to slowly give ground across the room, backing away toward the shadowy corner where there was a large glass display case filled with porcelain, crystal, and items of jewelry.
See? See how the force of evil fails before the force of light? Old stories were true, friends, all true!
I'm afraid, Mildred.
I see that.
No, let me finish. I was going to say that I was not frightened of your totem, Dr. Wyatt. It holds no more terror for me and for my brothers and sister than any child's bauble.
It's a crucifix.
No, this is a crucifix, Doctor.
Even in the dim light, the crucifix that Melmoth had withdrawn from the cabinet glowed with its own brilliant light. It looked to be very old, perhaps 16th century. The racked figure of Christ was gold, set on a cross of heavy lustrous silver. The whole thing was set with rubies and diamonds, emeralds and onyx. It was 18 inches long, and was one of the most beautiful things that Mildred had ever seen. And Melmoth the vampire was holding it calmly in his long-nailed right hand.
You see how little I fear your precious symbols of Aramaic superstition, Mildred.
He lifted it to his lips and kissed it. Then he put out his long serpentine tongue like a white worm and licked the rough surface of the crucifix. Mildred's right hand rested on the butt of the ZKR 551, and at that moment she was as close as she had ever been to shooting a man down in cold blood, though Melmoth Cornelius was not truly a man. He held the cross between his cupped hands in a gesture of mock piety.
If only you could see the spouting tricks that Sister Mary gets up to in her own private room with this pretty toy, Dr. Wyeth. I think even you would be convinced that it does not frighten us.
You've made your point. We'll stay as long as you like. Just let the boy go. Let Dean alone.
I think not. We have not lived close to 100 years by being stupid, Ryan. To let you have your son back would be the same as opening the main doors and giving you fast horses to ride away. No, the boy will live with us for a time.
He moved his hand from Dean's mouth.
I'll be all right, Dad. Don't worry about me.
Sure.
Well, this has all gone as we had hoped it would. As we knew it would, Outlanders. Remember that we have no wish to harm any of you. That would be against our own best ends, wouldn't it?
Melmoth was already leaving the room, heading for the stairs that would eventually take them up to their attic rooms.
Tomorrow we will have worked out a detailed plan for when we will need each of you.
Once we have gone, Norman, you may raise the light so that our guests can see properly to enjoy their meals. I look forward to starting the osmotic process with you all. Especially with you again, Ryan. The idea of reconnection is thrilling.
She followed
Thomas
Melmoth.
And Elric left together, taking Dean with them.
Well now, you know, people, it could be worse. You just believe me on that.
How?
Well, the family could have killed you all just last night. You saw what they did to that silly billy of a filmmaker. Oh, God, they have dreadful strength. Even Melmoth, and he's weak as a kitten compared to his usual ways.
Some of them have died, so they can be chilled.
The butler shook his head slowly.
Even the mightiest sequoias will fall eventually in the deeps of the forest. But if there's nobody there to hear that thunderous crash, is there any sound at all?
Don't play fucking Zen games with us, you preening little shit! You serve what must be one of the most perverse and vile families in the whole of Deathlands, and doing your chirpy and amusing little gay act with us doesn't excuse that.
Well, pardon me for living.
Living and partly living. Have you opened the door to the secret garden and taken the path least traveled? By the three Kennedys, but what a pathetic, whining bastard you are, Norman.
Well, you can just whistle down the pussy's well for food for all I care. You see as well, Dr. Tanner. You see I'm right. It could be much worse.
Might be worth scavenging into the kitchens. JP, maybe you and Jack could go see what you can beg, borrow, or steal.
Sure thing.
After we've eaten, we all meet up in our room for some serious planning. Christy, can you and Mildred and Doc turn the lamps back up?
Sure, lover.
Mildred came around the table and laid her hand on Ryan's arm. She lowered her head so that her mouth was close to his ear.
Anything you want to tell me, Ryan?
Like what?
All around the huge room, Doc and Christy turned up the wicks. And Ryan could definitely see the patches of shimmering golden light.
Like whether your sight might possibly be creeping back.
Ryan, is that true?
Maybe. Don't let on. Let's get back to our rooms.
When JB and Jack returned, about 15 minutes later, they were each taken aside by Mildred and told the news. They had brought some bread and butter and several jars of preserves, strawberry, blueberry, and lemon cheese, as well as a couple of bottles of pre-dark wine that Jack had found in a dusty corner of the cellar.
A Sancerre and a very good claret. I can tell you that those bottles will either be the nectar of the gods, or if they have not been properly tended, then they will taste like rancid camel piss.
Sadly, they had not been properly tended, and were both bitter and completely undrinkable.
Still, there's the best of Adam's brewery, from a barrel out near the rear entrance to the house. At least the water's good and wholesome. Only thing in this red-blasted place that is.
Can we get out that way?
Sure. But why bother, Ryan? Front door's bolted from the inside, not locked. Guess it's done to stop any would-be assassin getting in and trying to wipe out the family. Doesn't stop anyone from getting out.
From what we've seen about their invulnerability, they'd have a tough job.
I don't know.
Ryan allowed Christy to spread his bread with the fruit jelly, in case anyone watched from the slabs of deep shadow above them.
You got a plan, lover?
Let's finish up down here and get to our room.
They gathered quickly in Ryan and Christy's bedroom.
I was wondering whether a house like this might not have secret passages in it. Maybe a priest's bolt hole that could hide a rat or a ferret or a weasel or some other sneaking wildwooder.
Good thought, Doc. Gather around close. Jack, open the window if you can. A windy night might also help to confuse any listeners.
First things first. I need to check your eye, Ryan.
All right, but make it quick. Every moment that those sick bastards have Dean in their power is a triple dangerous moment. I know they said they wouldn't harm him as long as we cooperated, but I don't trust them as far as I could throw them.
For several minutes, Mildred carried out what tests she could, making Ryan move around the room, staring up at the oil lamps, spending some time with him in front of the opened windows, testing the extent of his vision.
Definitely some return of sight, Ryan. Nothing much to write home about, not yet. But a quantum leap forward from total blindness.
Will it continue to improve?
I had no way of knowing if Ryan would ever see again. Since I didn't know that, then there's no way I can give you a continuing prognosis. I just hope it keeps on improving.
When did you first think you might be able to see?
Can't really say. Just sort of noticed that bright lights seemed to be penetrating.
Bright lights? Now that's something we should talk about.
The discussion, argument, and planning went on for several hours. Ryan had never come across a situation where the enemy appeared to be literally indestructible. That, combined with the fact that the family held Dean as hostage against the good behavior and obedience of the others, meant that composing a combat strategy was uniquely difficult. Normally, their powerful weaponry lay heavy on their side of the scales. Here, it seemed almost worthless. Much of the discussion centered on just how immortal the surviving Cornelius family was.
One was crushed to death in a logjam on the river. And other one bind. Means they can be chilled. But have to completely whack them. Maybe cut their heads off? I wish we had some grins. I reckon that a few implodes might get rid of them.
I still like the idea of taking Norman as our hostage and offering a deal for Dean. Why is everyone so opposed to it, John?
Because none of us thinks there's the smallest hope of the family being interested in a deal like that. They do want Dean, and they don't seem to care all that much for Norman. Just a kind of servant, anyway.
Mildred stood and walked to the window.
Oh, well, the day's about done, and we still don't have much of a plan.
We got the makings of one. Just have to throw the dice and see what comes up, then make our moves. Needless to say, everyone keep on triple red. The family said that they'd have worked out a scheme for using us by tomorrow. They likely won't expect us to try anything until we've heard what their plan is. Might not expect any rebellion. They'll likely reckon we're cowed, like those poor bastards in Brampton.
Like the old vampires, they seem to do most of their living from dust.